You're listening to the audio version of Victory Condition Gaming, sponsored by Forget Me Not Flowers and Gifts in Barrie, Vermont. You can check them out online at forgetmenotflowersbarrie.com. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, search for Victory Condition Gaming, and you can also follow me on Twitter at DougVCGaming. And if you'd like to watch us live every week, make sure to subscribe to Victory Condition Gaming on YouTube. Hey everyone, welcome to our second session of the day for GraniteCon at home. This time I brought on my buddy, my friend, my pal, Mr. Alan Barr from Gallant Knight Games. Figured we'd just chat for a little while. Alan, is that good?
That's good by me.
All right, let's do this. Thanks for coming on, being a part of GraniteCon. GraniteCon at home, because of course they had to do their event virtually this year because of everything that's going on. And first, are you and the missus, are you doing well in the midst of all that's going on right now in this?
We've been doing okay.
Good.
Things are a little hectic, but you know, hence my, I guess, but
it's all good, my friend. I've been trying to get you to GraniteCon. I tried to get you out over last year, but you know things just didn't kind of work out because you're a busy guy. You got lots of RPGs to publish and produce and design but I'm glad you're a part of the GraniteCon this year.
Me too.
So let's talk a little bit about GraniteCon, and I'm going to tell folks that if you're or let's talk a little bit about Gallant Knight Games. I'm going to tell folks if you have any questions for Alan, leave them in the chat, and we'll address them as we go along. Of course, if folks have watched this or subscribed and watched VCG for a while, you know that Alan's been on quite a bit. But let's just talk a little bit about it. I think you're one of the success stories in this industry over the last couple of years. I've had the pleasure of meeting you since you did your Mechas and Monsters Kickstarter, and things have just kind of grown bigger and bigger for you. And I thought maybe we would just kind of get behind that and just kind of talk a little bit of what it's like being a success in the industry. Do you feel like you're a success in this industry?
It depends on the day, probably more than anything else.
Yeah, no doubt. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about yourself? Well, how you got into gaming, like who you are, and because I think that I think that's important, because a lot of these folks that want to become publishers, I think that they're like, oh, I don't really have a background in this, or I'm just a gamer or whatever, and I kind of want to hear the Alan Barr story. Let's hear
about it. Really boring. I don't have a really cool story or anything. Got into gaming. I was young, at scout camp, playing D&D, and just kind of lived in North Dakota growing up. So I didn't get a chance to play a lot till I got to college. But once I got to college, I kind of went all in on RPGs and went downhill from there. I mean, that's the story. I don't know. There's not much there other than played a lot of games.
What motivated you to become a publisher?
Why I became a publisher, or why I became an RPG designer?
I mean, let's go with the RPG designer first. Let's do that, because I think you were that first before you were a publisher.
Chicken egg thing, maybe.
Yeah, kind of.
So I had a friend, Howard Taylor, who does the Schlock Mercenary webcomic.
Right.
And I had been doing, like, back in the day on forums. You remember forums? It used to be a thing.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what chat rooms are, forums, or anything. That's way before my time, Alan.
Okay. So we were on forums, and they would do these adventure design contests or these whatever, right?
Yeah.
Kind of fan design stuff. And one of the big ones for that, there was a design forum on the Wizards of the Coast forums for a long time during the 3.x era of D&D. And I would enter all of those, and they were terrible. Like, I was so bad. But I entered every single one for a while. And somebody took pity on me and gave me some advice one day about how to not suck.
Okay.
They reached out and said, look, you keep entering. Here's some things you can do to help. I think they got tired of seeing my crappy entries repeatedly. so they reached out and told me how to improve. And I couldn't tell you their name for the life of me. And I wish I still had it so I could tell them thank you. But I got better, and did a few contests and I did okay. And I kind of did stuff like that. And so my friend Howard, who does Slack Mercenary, he was local, he's local to me in Utah. And he was like, I want to do an RPG. And he's like, I don't know what I want to do for sure. So if I were to ask you to design it, what would you do? And I gave him my pitch. He's like, that's perfect. You completely captured the spirit of the game that I need to make. Let's have pay you to design it. And I was like, oh, okay. That's not the thing I'm doing. And so about 3 years doing that, and then we ran a Kickstarter for Planet Mercenaries, what's the game's named. It did really well back in 2015. And yeah, they kind of just snowballed from there. I started Gallant right after that and said, I've got other stuff to do, so let's do it.
That's awesome. What was the first project that you did for Gallant Knight Games?
The first project we did for Gallant was Tiny Frontiers, our sci-fi game. And then the second was Mecha Monsters. So
Tiny Frontiers, that was the Tiny D6.
Before it was D6. Yep.
Yeah.
It was actually, we licensed the rules from the creator at Smoking Salamander Games to do that Kickstarter. And it did okay-ish.
Yeah.
By back then I was like, this is the best Kickstarter ever. Like, clearly I have done all the great things.
Sure.
Looking back, I'm like, oh man, I didn't know what I was getting into. And so then we did Mechas and Monsters, and the creator of Tiny Dungeon wasn't going to do anything with it anymore. He was done. So I bought the rights and the IP basically from him.
Nice. Okay.
So Tiny D6 became a GKG thing wholesale.
Very cool.
We kind of just kept rolling from there into Tiny Dungeon and Tiny everything else.
It's been awesome. Yeah, it's been really awesome to see you kind of just grow, and now you're moving into, like, you know, you did Four Coin and Blood, which is like an OSR title. You know, you did Cold Shadows, which, you know, it's totally, you know, your own system and everything. Like, it's been really, really cool to see you grow over these last few years.
Thanks. It's been a thing.
It's been a thing. It's awesome.
You know, I think success always looks really easy to people outside of it, and to the people on the inside, they're freaking out all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When was the moment that you're like, have you had that moment yet where it's like, you know what? I'm kind of successful at doing this now.
You know, I think I have that moment once a day, and about an hour later I have the moment of, oh God, it's all going to fall apart. Every day.
Yeah. I mean,
I think it kind of goes back and forth. For me, it was when Tiny Supers won at Bamsy, and then a couple months later, three other games of ours went platinum on DriveThruRPG, and I was like, oh, I seem to be doing okay at this.
That's great.
You know, it was, for a while, it was only Tiny Dungeon that was really, and that's definitely our bestseller by far. But it kind of felt like we were a one-trick pony. Like, our other games were okay, but Tiny Dungeon was the one everybody was into, right?
Right. That's like your flagship, yeah.
Right, and that's not bad. I wasn't upset about that because, you know, one, I get paid either way. Like, it doesn't matter what one you buy, I'm getting paid. And two, any level of success is great, right? Like, hey, sure. I didn't completely flub it, so this is a giant win on my level. then when the rest kind of tipped over, I was like, oh, okay, we're not just a one-trick pony. We're just, sometimes some of our tricks take a little slower to pull off than others.
Well, do you think, I think that having that one trick, if you want to call it, I think when you have that flagship product, it brings people over to your other titles and makes them notice it. Like, hey, you know, what else is this? I know them for this. What else do they have that interests me? And I think it gets more eyeballs on your other products too. Absolutely. Which is cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've done Tiny Dungeon second edition.
Yep.
You just did a second edition for Coin and Blood.
Yeah.
It just was very successful on Kickstarter.
Yeah, it did way better than we projected, which is always a nice feeling.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. What titles do you... I mean, you're always constantly working on on all your product lines. Which ones really kind of get you amped up to, like, that you're like, oh, I can't wait to go back to this product line for the next couple months?
Generally, whatever one I didn't just work on.
Okay.
Like, is, you know, and I've talked to other creatives who kind of have the same thing. Like, when you work on something for a while, then you move to something else, it's almost a sense of relief. And so it's kind of the cyclical design. Like, if I do something for Tiny D6, it's nice to go do something like for Quit and Blood or to work on a project for the Patreons that's totally different. And stretch my legs or take on a freelance assignment, whatever, right? Like, it's nice to break the mold and do something else. So I'm generally just kind of excited to just do something else that was different. Sure. But I'm always thrilled when I get to work on something like espionage related. I love spy games. Sure. So that's always, if I could write spy games and superhero games all day long, that's all I would do. 100%. It'd just be spies and superheroes, nothing else. You'd see like 10 spy RPGs come out for me. So
very cool. What are some of your favorite spy and superhero movies?
Ooh,
let's go with spy first.
Yeah. So movies, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the 2011 version with Gary Oldman's amazing.
Okay.
Some of the best spy stuff isn't movies. So you have The Night Manager from AMC.
Yep. Which I love that series.
I think it's amazing. Little Drummer Girl from AMC.
Okay.
There's no accident that all three of those are Le Carre adaptations either. By the way, that's deliberate. I love the movie Most Wanted Man, one of the last movies that Philip Seymour Hoffman did.
Okay.
Like another Le Carre adaptation. The classic British series The Sandbaggers is amazing. Like, there's so much good spy stuff out there. I like the tense thriller spy stuff. I like the action movie like Mission Impossible spy stuff, but I think they miss a little bit of the point of what a good spy story can do when talking about like the human condition and the cost of our actions. So I really like the darker, thriller-esque, non-action movie style spy stories.
Okay, cool. What about superhero or movies? Are you
I'm a Marvel nerd? So anything
you're Marvel? Okay.
Yeah, Marvel is. I'm 100% on board. I mean, I think I saw Endgame 5 or 6 times in theaters. I saw first Captain America over 20.
Wow.
He's my favorite Captain America movie, and I just kept going.
Nice. Are you excited for Winter Soldier and Falcon in the Winter Soldier series?
Yeah, I'm so psyched. I cannot wait for really any of that. Marvel hasn't made very many missteps in my book. They made a few, but I am completely uncritical about Marvel movies. I am 100% just going to go and like it. You could not do anything, and I'd be like, yes. Yes, Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I saw that Disney Plus is still planning on putting out WandaVision before the end of the year, which is good to see. But they didn't say anything about Falcon and Winter Soldier series, which
I don't think they finished filming it before they had to shut it down.
Yeah,
so they probably can't. I think WandaVision they had said they'd finished filming, but they're doing their anthology series, the What If animated series. Yep. Yeah, that'll be out before the end of the year, I think they said.
MCU is the best thing to happen to comic book movies. Yeah, absolutely. Midnight. It's definitely set the standard for those movies for definitely sure.
People to take it a little more seriously in some ways.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely think people took it seriously before. You had X-Men and Spider-Man were great. But I definitely think it kind of elevated the conversation a little bit of, oh, hey, we can take these serious a little more seriously when we're producing them. And they're not just for kids or something.
Sure. Sure.
Because you get great stuff like what's the Brightburn, right? Superhero movie, but it's
before. Oh yeah, I haven't seen that. Is that good?
I haven't seen it either. It's on my list.
I want to see it. So it was supposed to be like the reverse or the alter, like a reverse Justice League kind of, like it was supposed to set up something like that. But since it bombed in theaters, it didn't.
I haven't seen it, but
I want to see it.
Yeah, it's on my list. But you can do a lot with the spy genre or the superhero genre. So I'm glad to see people are starting to push the lines.
Nice. We've got a question from Jim Davies. Jim asks, any spy RPG recommendations?
Oh, all right. Buckle up.
All right. We're ready for it, Alan.
All right. So my personal favorite, and Doug knows, normally I don't toot my own horn, but I think Cold Shadows is one of the best spy RPGs in the market.
Okay.
It's a little rough around the edges. It was the third or fourth game we did. And one day I will go back and I'll clean it up, but I don't know when that will be. So look at it kindly. There's some issues with it that, you know, 3 years later I could totally fix. So I love Cold Shadows. I'm a big fan of there's some really good retro clones of the old James Bond RPG from Victory. What was it called? Victory. I've just been Victory Gaming. I don't remember.
Okay.
But they had a great James Bond RPG. You can't get it anymore, but there's a game called Classified that is a retro clone of the James Bond RPG, and that's pretty fun if you like that style of game. Covert Ops is pretty good. The new Top Secret is, it's a little different. I think you kind of have to be on the same wavelength as the game, but if you are, it's really good. Yeah, I mean, those are some of the big ones. There's out-of-print ones like Spycraft. There's Covert Ops. There's White Lies. There's, I have a lot of Spy RPGs. There's a lot of Spy RPGs. Sure. I think I only have a single one. So.
Nice. Okay. Cool. So you said that you switch, you know, you kind of work in phases as far as designing games and putting out product lines. How hard is that to switch gears, to go from one line to another? As you know, since you are kind of the main force behind Gallant Knight Games, it's got to be kind of, I would think that for me, it would be kind of hard to kind of go from like Tiny D6 to, you know, For Coin and Blood or, you know, Cold Shadows. But that's just kind of how I work, I think.
Yeah, yes and no is hard. Sometimes it just depends, right? Sometimes yeah. I'm so excited to not work on something for a little bit that is really easy. Okay. Sometimes it's more about the subject matter. Like, it was really hard to write Tiny Cthulhu over the last year.
Like, okay.
Like, we finished a Kickstarter right when the state started issuing stay-at-home orders.
Sure.
So trying to write a cosmic horror game when there's a pandemic, when there's all these social and political upheavals going on, and the world is the way it has been for 2020.
That
game was late, and it took me a lot of work to get it done. I did not like writing that game. That was just really hard to do across the board, and I was very excited to lose gears from it. And I wrote like 3 different RPGs like within 2 weeks of stopping. And I felt such a sense of relief.
That one was really highly anticipated too. People were like clamoring for Tiny Cthulhu for the longest time.
Yeah, and I'm glad it's done. It's going to be great. We did a good job with it. I have no complaints, but it definitely took me. It took a lot out of me to do it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I can understand that. Sure. Oh man. So, what if you could work on any RPG? I'm going to ask you this because if you could work on any RPG. Like line or for another, if you could design your dream RPG, I think I kind of know what the answer is going to be, but if you could work on any RPG, what's that?
You don't know. And I want to hear,
really?
I want to hear what you think it is.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, if you could work on any RPG, like to like make like a source book or just design something, what would it be? And I was thinking it would probably be, I can't think of it. Not Pendragon, but it's the what's the other one? Is it Pendragon? Yeah, it's Pendragon, right?
Yeah. Pendragon's what I'm a fan of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually did some Pendragon work when I worked at Nocturnal Media, so I've got that checked off my list. You'll see my name in a couple of the books. I would actually convince Free League to do a spy game using the Year Zero engine that had like a map of Berlin with stickers on it, kind of Forbidden Land style. That's what I would want Free League to come to me and be like, yo, we will give you a pile of money to make your dream spy RPG that's like this.
And okay.
My dream product. And mostly because I don't want to deal with the publishing side of stickers and boxes. That sounds awful. They do a really good job and their books are beautiful, so I'd much rather they just do it. That's what I would want. That's my dream.
Well, so, you know,
watching, I'm all over the internet. You can buy me.
I might be able to forward this video link over to a few folks, but no guarantees, my friend. No guarantees. Let's see here. Farseer 05, thank you so much for coming on and joining us. It says, greetings, I have enjoyed Gala Knight Games very much and funded both Tiny Supers and Monster Hunter International. I'm looking forward to what other games are planned for West End Games D6 Second Edition. Ooh.
I cannot talk about licenses that we have licensed.
Okay.
At the time. So I am sorry, but I cannot answer that question because. I'm not the final right. stop. So.
Right. But you've got plans. There are plans. Nice. Okay. There are plans,
but I cannot say more than that.
What was it? I mean, you kind of picked up your first big IP. Was it last year with Zorro? Was Zorro last year?
Zorro, yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty interesting. I was glad to see you kind of pick up an IP instead of working on something that something that's kind of like it's a household name. I know you can't say anything that any particulars, but is that something that you would like to do going forward? Like, would you like to try to go for more IPs and try to see if Gala Knight Games would venture out and
a few IPs before that, and we've done Zorro, and they're a lot of fun to work on. There's a really great kind of collaborative space around an RPG when you're not the person in charge of every little detail, and IPs really give you that. So, I mean, would we do more IPs in the future? Absolutely. What are they going to be? When will they be? That, you know.
Right. Yeah. I'm not looking for anything in particular, but I was just like, is that something that do you see that being a direction that Gala Knight Games would go to? Okay.
Yeah. Cool. We'll never go full IP. Like, that's not my thing. I like creating our own stuff too much, but we definitely will do more with IPs down the road, I'm sure.
Farseer 05 also asks, I am really looking forward to the new edition of Blue Planet RPG. Any news on that?
No.
Okay. No, no news on that. No.
Jeff Barber is still working on it. He's working hard, and that's that. He's still moving forward. GKG is just the publisher. Jeff is the creative force behind it. So that's a question for Jeff, not me. It'll be done when Jeff says it's done, and GKG will be there to help him whenever he needs. So
sweet. Do you like doing that, being like kind of the publisher and just kind of, letting designers, like how much, I know you do a lot with different designers and different studios, and just, publishing their projects. How is that a lot less work for you or does it kind of depend on what project it?
It's a different amount, but a different type of work too, right? So right. When I do a GKG game, let's say Tiny D6, I am involved from start to finish because I do the rules. I organize all the freelancers who write anything else on it. I do all the art direction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? When GKG helps another publisher with our publishing agreements, usually what happens is they're doing the writing, they're organizing the freelancers, they're doing the art direction. And every project's a little different. So sometimes that's not the case or whatever. And so then we come in when it's ready to be published, kickstarted, whatever. And that's where I still do that part of work. The publishing work that I do for our games, I have to do there too, but I'm not always as involved with the other steps up to that point. Okay. It just products at the point, so it just depends sometimes.
Sure.
But we just, we try to, usually when they ask me a question, what I tell them is, what's your creative vision? Make that thing happen. And that's, I'm not here to tell you what you can and can't do. I'm just here to make sure you can make your game. So.
Cool. Why do you think Gallant Knight Games? I mean, there's a lot of publishers out there that are making RPGs. Some of them seem to find traction. Some of them don't. Some of them find, why do you think Gallant Knight Games has been able to find the traction that they have over these last few years? I'm throwing these questions at you now.
Fully, I would be able to replicate it all the time.
Sure. I'm just because I know success isn't something that's just instant. It's something that you have to work towards, and something that you don't get it overnight. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at is that this. I think that the reason why we have to embrace our failures and some of our missteps in order to become successful. And success is something that we build on. It's not something that's gained overnight. And it's nice to see, and speaking as a creator and speaking, from someone that's also, a creator on your side, although it's a different medium, but you've had success. And I'm just trying to see where do you think what has helped Gallant Knight games become the success that it has, whether it's, you know, failures or missteps or something that was, you know, a success for you.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. One, our games are pretty accessible from a rules level. We design pretty straightforward, minimalist. I would, if I somebody in a review said this, and I think they meant it derogatorily, but I didn't take it that way. They said I'm like the Michael Bay of RPGs because everything I make is like a popcorn filler game.
Okay. Like
there's no deep nuance to my games. Right. I was like, I'm not offended by that. Like,
no, that's
watch a dumb action movie, right?
Absolutely. There's an audience for that.
Yeah, like that doesn't bother me. So we do make a lot of our games would fall in the category of they're lightweight, they're easy to teach, they're easy to learn, they're accessible. They are not asking big complicated questions, you know. They're just there to kind of enable the group to sit down and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's part of it. And to that reviewer, I would say, if you're watching this, which you're probably not, but if you are, Cold Shadows had a lot of complicated questions. I am not a one-trick pony. I just have a trick I really like. So, anyway, there's that. So,
nice. Was there any, in these last few years, is there any misstep or something that you missed the mark on that you were like, oh, I should have done something a little bit differently, but now that I have done this, you know, not optimally, I know going forward that I can do with, you know, I'm always, like I said, I'm a big believer in when you make a mistake, you don't get down about it. You learn from it and you move on, and that's how you become successful. And so, I'm just kind of curious, you know, if any other publisher or aspiring publisher or anything is watching this, you know, it's easy, like you said, it's easy to sit back and go, oh, Gallant Knight Games, they've been so successful over the last few years. They don't realize that, oh, well, I made a, like Alan made a misstep here that he wishes he could have taken back or this has prompted him to become like successful on somewhere else.
Made loads of mistakes. Luckily, most of them are on the back end and not public.
Well, now I'm trying to call you out on them and make them public pretty much, Alan. That's
yeah.
I'm not really.
I wish I'd done better research in how to start a small business and do all that stuff.
Okay.
We made some mistakes thinking like my internet research was good enough, and I wish I'd just paid a professional to help me at the start. It would have saved me some headaches down the road. I can't express that enough. If you don't know how to do that, pay somebody who knows how to do that. It is not for the faint of heart to try to sort out taxes and incorporations and stuff like that. Don't try to do that on your own is my advice. Sure. You know, there's some things I wish we'd done differently. I don't think we've had any failures. We've never had a Kickstarter fail to fund that we've launched.
No, it's always been successful.
Are there things I would change? Yes, usually it's around communication. Like I would find ways to communicate better about certain things. And a lot of that you can fix once you find out, right? People will say, this is confusing on the Kickstarter. And I'm like, oh, I can change that. Let me go fix that, right?
Right.
So I think, and this is a weird thing to say as a creative and a publisher, I need to not trust myself so much. I need to actually, because a lot of the times I'll be like, well, this worked on this previous Kickstarter. I'm just going to replicate that, right?
Sure.
Because I did it. And so I need to constantly be doing better at pushing forward into new things, new ways to reach audience, stuff like that, right? And it's easy to get complacent. You know, there's this thing that works. I'm going to just hit the repeat button until it quits working. And we haven't done that on a major level, but there's definitely places where I'm like, I wish I had changed this, or I wish I'd taken advantage of this new feature or whatever.
Okay, so cool. Yeah. It's easy to get stuck in the rut of, you know, okay, this works. We're just going to keep going this way. Cause I think, I think you do a good job of this and you do try to stay pretty similar on some things, but you do veer off every once in a while and try to change things up so that, you know, there's something new for folks to look forward to.
Yeah. So it's, That would be the thing I think I need to do better at if I was going to do something.
I was surprised that you didn't say, ignore the guy that messaged me on Kickstarter during my Mechas and Monsters Kickstarter, and just pretend. And
I'm trying to correct is being so mean to you on public. I'm only now, so I can't be held accountable.
Oh, I thought for sure I was trying to like lob that up for you. Like, I know. The one mistake that I made was replying to this guy that was like, "Oh, I'm so excited about Tiny Frontiers, Megas and Monsters." Should have never responded to that guy.
I love coming up with your
condition. We love having you on too, Alan. And I'm so bummed that we couldn't get a chance to see each other in person this year.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I definitely would have done more research into running streaming games before the Tiny Dungeon campaign. I did not do my research, and it bit me in the butt about a third of the way through, and then it just ended the campaign.
So much fun. So much fun.
I had a viewer reach out to me and say, "Hey, I watched this campaign." And I was like, "Oh, crap." He was like, "And it was a lot of fun, and I really liked how you admitted all your mistakes at the end and how you screwed up." And I was like, "Okay." He's like, "I would like to talk to you about that." And I was like, "Oh, yay. Let's talk about that." And he was really great. He had a bunch of, like, he's like, you know, you talked about how you should have cut the GM mistakes you made and how to catch them and stuff. And that was great. But, you know, I was definitely like, oh, this guy just wants to talk about all the mistakes I made publicly. I was dreading that interview, but he did a great job.
That was a fun session. I still get comments to this day on episodes, probably at least once a week or so. People message or comment on those episodes, and it's a lot of fun. Okay. It's nice seeing folks discover that content and still be like, you know, they embrace it for what it is. It's shenanigans. Let's just call it out. It's shenanigans more than anything else.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Let's go to some of the questions in the comments here. Far05 says in a previous interview, I heard about plans for Tiny Cyberpunk. Is it coming out soon?
Soon is a relative term. So 2020 has made a mess of all my plans. It would have been out this year. It will not be out this year.
Okay.
I probably won't run another Tiny D6 Kickstarter till next year at this point.
All right.
So
is that probably the next one up
after Cthulhu, that'll be the next one. So it'll be the next big tiny D6 Kickstarter we do. We might do some smaller ones or something in between. We always do some of those print on demand ones sometimes, but I probably won't launch it till next year at this point. Yeah. 2020 has been a nightmare, and I just want to get all my late stuff out the door, like Cthulhu and some of these other projects. So,
well, I think that kind of speaks to, you know, your success, you know, on Kickstarter and as a publisher in general. You try not to overextend yourself. You know, if you've got a couple late projects or you put deadlines to hit, you try to hit them as much as you can. And if something's behind, you're like, okay, well, I need to get this done before I try to tackle more projects as well. And, you know, as a person that wants to do everything, like I know personally, like I want to just do all these different projects, and you know, I have all these ideas and my attention span is just all over the place. Like, that's really hard for me to come to terms with. So, you know, the fact that you're able to do that, you know, pretty much all the time, that says something about, you know, you as a designer, publisher and whatnot.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it says other than I make mistakes, but thank you.
No. I think it just says that you want to make sure that people get what they have pledged for before you move on to the next thing. And that's always nice to see. You know, you don't ever want to see, you know, something just kind of get abandoned and go like, okay, well, it'll get out when it gets out.
Yeah.
Let's go here. Zach asks, which is ZWolf123. Question for Alan. Can you give us some info about Tiny Corruptions for Cthulhu? Yeah,
there is. So I can, but rather than do that, I am going to tell you on the Kickstarter, in one of the updates, we did a pretty extensive deep dive into it. You can just go look at that update. I think it's titled something like Corruption. So just look for the one that says Corruption, and you can do that. We also were just talking about it in the Tiny D6 channel on the GKG Discord earlier this week, and we linked to that update. So that'll, rather than go into it here, you know, you can, that was literally like a copy paste of the whole chapter from the book into the Kickstarter update. So that's the best way to go find an answer for that. So
nice. Let's go here. Brad says, Midnight Blue says accountants and lawyers can be useful. kind of, yeah. I mean,
keto's have their uses, right? Like everything.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I counted my lawyer. I say my bacon too many times to count. I love you guys dearly. Thank you.
Brad, the Alliance is, as a big fan of Gala Knight Games, Alan has done a fantastic job of making himself accessible to his fan base through Facebook, Discord, Patreon, and other mediums. I, for one, appreciate this immensely. And again, that's just another reason why I think you are successful as far as a publisher and everything that you do at Gala Knight Games. James says, no, the biggest mistake Alan made was partnering with that Spawn guy. Yeah. Yeah. Fair lot of games.
I got nothing to say.
Yeah. Let's see here. Human Simulator says, mistakes are happy accidents and learning experiences. We're getting very Bob Ross up in here.
I don't know if I would say happy, but they are definitely accidents and they are definitely learning experiences.
Let's see here. Midnight Blue says, I will not stop summoning, sacrificing for Beach Patrol, Innsmouth, Father Dragon, Mother Hydra, and David Hasselhoff cannot be silenced. Do you have any plans for Beach Patrol? The smash hit RPG, might I add.
And it's a relative term.
Beach Patrol. If nobody has checked out Beach Patrol on Drive-Thru RPG, you definitely should. It is Baywatch the RPG, pretty much. Without saying that it's Baywatch, it's amazing. Let's just say that.
So our final stretch goal was originally going to be Beach Patrol Innsmouth, and we talked about this with the Patreon backers. And the last week the campaign was closing was right when everything was ramping up with COVID in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the decision. I talked to the backers about this. I posted an update to them. But I made the decision that with everything so in flux and things going crazy, we were going to suspend the stretch goal and we would just get to... It was just, you know, I was concerned about, because shipping prices have been all over the board. Printing prices have started being all over the board. I was like, look, we did a budget. The last 2 weeks have just wrecked the budget at this point because of everything going on. And I am uncomfortable committing farther down the road at this point. And the backers were super great. They were like, yeah, we totally understand. You should definitely make sure you can get the core stuff out before you do anything else. So they were awesome. But yeah, we kind of had a conversation with the backers and myself. And I said, look, this is what I want to do. I am concerned about the situation, yada, yada, yada. And they're all like, that makes sense. Thanks for telling us. Let's keep going. And then they still raised a crap load of money after that. Because they're
nice. Okay.
So I told them I'd do it one day. Because I'm sure I have the best backers in the world. I think every Kickstarter creator says that, right? It was like how every parent is like, I have the best kids in the world. My kid's the cutest. Right? I've got the cutest Kickstarter backers in the world and the cutest supporters. They're great. Like, they're my kids.
You've got a great great community behind you. But, that's for
they've
sure.
been the people super supportive. So it's been awesome. And they were really funny with all the delays during the Kickstarter. You know, I tried to post regularly saying, hey, I'm working. It's hard.
Sure.
And we're a couple months late now, but the book is getting done. So it's in layout, which is nice.
Midnight Blue also says I just want to point this out. I put it on the screen twice. Is one of the best VCG playthroughs also of Beach. was Beach Patrol.
Becky is the worst.
Tower 2 for life, my friend. Tower 2 for life.
It was a lot of fun.
That was ridiculous.
A lot of fun.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I still
have that David Hasselhoff wig somewhere.
Do you really? I still have the aviator sunglasses, that's for sure. Yeah. Let's see. What else do you want to talk about, Alan, while we've got folks here? Are you excited? I know Gen Con and some of these other conventions were canceled and everything. Are you planning on doing conventions in 2021? It's kind of hard to say at this point what the future kind of holds for us as a country.
If it's going to be safe and no risk, then other than the normal sort of con crud risk you have, then the answer is yes, we would go back to conventions. But I'm going to want to be sure it's really safe. So
sure.
Yeah. You know, and like, I get that. And I have some friends who make their living on the con circuit doing stuff. And 2020 has been an awful year for them.
Yeah, it's been tough.
Level for me, like not having to go to Gen Con and do all these cons was kind of nice. I just stayed home.
You probably got to work on certain things.
I'm trying to find the silver lining for me personally in there. Obviously, I realize my situation is different than everybody else's. But personal silver lining for me was, you know, no Gen Con meant I got 2 weeks of my life back and, you know, probably a year of my life back.
Gen Con is not low stress. Well, I'm kind of bummed. Like, this was the year that we were supposed to be at the VCG was supposed to be at Gen Con. It was supposed to be at Origins, PAX Unplugged, you know. And I was hoping that we'd at least, you know, catch up at one of those events. So to kind of sit here at home and be kind of bummed that I can't see all my friends, it's been a downer.
Definitely hard. I have a lot of friends I only see at various conventions, and not having those was rough. But yeah. You know, what are you going to do too, right? Like, definitely something I can't control, so I'll just keep doing that.
That's true.
Well, I got to do VCG online, which I ran like a whole day of games for.
Yeah, you did. That was fun. We had a good time.
Like, was it three or four sessions that day?
I did three sessions of Tiny Saturday Mornings, yeah. Which it hasn't been out yet, has it?
You've been working on other things? Getting Heidi Cthulhu done kind of pushed it to the side and sure. Other commitments. Freelance gigs, stuff like that. So it's on my radar. I actually was working on it last week. Yeah.
Nice. Now, Tiny Dungeon has been translated to other languages at this point.
Yeah, several of our Tiny games have. Tiny Supers, Tiny Frontiers, Tiny Dungeon.
Is that something that you're looking to do with any of the other titles at all, or is it a separate publisher that's been doing those?
Yeah, we license it to other publishers who are native to that language. Just a lot. I mean, I could hire translators and do it, but they know their markets. I don't know what the market like is in Spain for selling RPGs. I want to know the first place to start, right? I don't know. Like, every market's different. Like, how big are indie games? How do you get the game into stores there? Who are the major distributors? Who are the major reviewers in that language? Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know that stuff. And so when they come to me and they say, hey, we would love to do this, it's a lot easier for me to say yes than it is for me to say, no, I'm going to do it myself.
Sure.
So
yeah, it takes a lot.
The only step we take really is we do approval. So we check the layout and I usually hire somebody in that language to kind of give it a proofread and just make sure.
Okay.
Like, there's nothing great. They didn't slip in something that I have wild concerns about, but I've never had a problem. All my translation partners have been nothing but amazing.
So it's just been the tiny D6 games that have been translated, or have you had any other titles?
So Tiny Dungeon, Tiny Frontiers Revised, and Tiny Supers have been translated into Spanish by Akuma Studios. They're fantastic. Fork, Wind, and Blood was translated into Spanish by the Hills Press like 2 years ago. It's been out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hills has announced they have a couple other non-Tiny licenses from GKG they're going to translate.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Carrion Lands and some other stuff like that.
Cool.
And then there is translations coming in a couple other languages. German, Portuguese, I think French. I need to check that.
Uh-huh. It's noon at the bar household right now.
It's busy.
Yeah. We actually have a question from Brad. Let's pop another question up from Brad. With the increase
hard questions, people.
What's that?
The hard questions.
Hey, you know what?
I expected softball interviews here.
I figured people would bring the heat, so I tried to keep my questions at least pretty tame. With the increase of popularity of RPGs due to more accessible game systems, podcasts, and live streams, any idea what the next big trend will be in the industry?
There's a couple options. I think you're going to see one of two things. And the RPG industry is a little weird because so much of it is hardcore analog with dice and books and stuff. It moves a little differently into the online space, I think you've seen that with how long it took for like Roll20 to catch on for a lot of people until the pandemic, sure. Right?
Yep.
So I am by no means an expert in this. This is just my gut feelings. I think you're gonna see one of two things. I think you're gonna see an increase in online tabletop applications first. We've already started seeing that, right? Astral. I saw like three on new ones on Twitter yesterday talking about their stuff. There's a Kickstarter for one a little while ago.
Yep.
And so you're going to see the usual, a bunch of businesses crop up and the dust kind of settles and you'll see who's left standing. I'm a big fan of Astral. I actually been using it lately and I really like it.
Nice. I haven't tried it. I'll have to try it out.
I tried Roll 20. I tried a bunch. I like Roll 20. And I tried Astral and I liked Astral a lot. I was surprised how much I actually liked it.
Nice.
And I need to try some of the others. I'm always trying to try them. So you're going to see more publishers move that way. You're going to see more of these crop up and you're going to see a fragmentation a little bit, right? So like what selling stuff on Astral or Roll 20 is going to be different between the two. Cause they sometimes require, various applications or setups. And so I think you're going to see publishers kind of fragment onto their preferred one where they release their material. Okay. I think that's going to happen. And then I think the next big thing, there's one of two things that I see being the next big thing. One is RPGs that use VR.
Okay, interesting.
As VR headsets become, it's the same thing like we have with smartphones, right?
Right.
The more accessible smartphones become, the more everybody has one, the more tools get pushed to smartphones,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing we see with any sort of technology. Like, I'm trying to think, like, I was just talking about this with somebody the other day. Now I can't think of it. But as more people can get their hands on a tool, the more you can leverage that tool. So as VR gets cheaper and is more commonplace, and it's not just sort of like a VR set, it's a couple hundred bucks, right?
Right.
Not every gamer is going to buy a VR set. But as they get cheaper, as people have them more and more, I think you're going to see virtual tabletops move to VR.
Okay.
Right. So like if I can sit in my living room, put my VR headset on, and look like I'm sitting at a table with my buddies all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even need to be like a LARP style thing, like just a freaking virtual table. I can roll virtual dice on and have a virtual character sheet and minis and stuff. I think that's going to be surprisingly big.
Do you think that like people will all have their own like headset, like almost like a Zoom meeting, but in 3D?
Basically. But I think what's going to happen is, rather than headsets, I think you'll see people get to the point where they can do VR kind of stuff with phones and tablets and computers.
Okay.
Right? Like,
yep.
That's where it's going to start to shift.
Okay. What about...
That's pretty far. Okay. That's some sci-fi level stuff, so who knows?
So
I'm really waiting for my holodeck from Star Trek, so I can run my RPGs in a holodeck.
So now everybody knows that the latest project from Gallant Knight Games is the virtual Gallant Knight Games home system that... No, you know what I think? I think this is going to be in the tabletop industry in general. I think you're going to see more Kickstarters and more publishers be okay with designing files for folks to 3D print elements for their RPGs and for their board games and stuff. I think that's going to be the trend that you're going to see here in the next 5 years. I think that's going to be more and more as 3D printers, like just like smartphones, as they become more accessible, more,
that's what you're talking about is 3D printers.
Was it really?
Oh, yeah. That's the thing we're talking about is more because people are getting them more and more now.
Oh yeah.
They're cheap. Cheaper, better and better.
Yep.
And so, and like DirectUrpg has a whole section of 3D print files you can buy now. There's a whole category just for 3D print files there where people sell stuff now. So I think it's definitely going to keep happening.
I think that's going to be in just across the board. I think you're going to see that for board games and tabletop games. And I think you're going to see it for RPGs. I think, you know, those are going to be stretch goals. Okay. Well, one of our stretch goals is you're going to be able to 3D print, you know, this monster that,
we'll design a box insert for your board game that you can 3D print and put in the box to keep it organized.
Exactly.
Your first player token you can 3D print if you want, whatever.
Exactly.
Agree.
Let's see here. Midnight Blue asks, I know Alan doesn't have a lot to do with this, but I'm just excited and curious for the project. But does he have any idea what's going on with the Hollywood RPG Kickstarter? Super excited for it. I haven't heard anything about this.
That was kickstarted back in 2015, I think. 2014.
Okay.
By Stuart Wick and Nocturnal Media.
Oh.
And I worked at Nocturnal Media. I was a full-time employee for a bit. And when Stuart passed, a company called Hard Boiled Games agreed to finish the Hollywood Kickstarter because Nocturnal was going to cancel it.
Oh, okay.
And they retained me as a project manager just to help them because they never published before. It was like comprised of translators and editors who'd been working on it, but they didn't know how to do production. So they're like, well, we're just going to keep Alan because Alan knows. But I don't, unless I hear from them, I don't have anything. Like, I just,
okay.
It's not,
no, that's fine.
Not a GKG product. So I'm only in the loop as far as people tell me I'm in the loop.
Sure.
And how much I can do. So,
okay. That makes sense.
Sorry. I wish I had a better answer. I backed it. It was actually the first Nocturnal Media project I backed on Kickstarter, and I really want my copy, so I get it.
Jim Davies says augmented reality as well. James also says an advanced version of tabletop simulator. Yeah.
I think you're going to see that's the next step technology will do to RPGs.
Nice.
And then 3D printers, like you said, I think will be one of the other ones. Those are the two branches I see. But I am often surprised, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll see something like, because Alice is Missing just came out, right?
It did, yeah. From
entirely via text message, if I recall.
It's all done right on your mobile phone.
Yeah, so stuff like that might be the other big push. Leveraging technology to tell stories in different ways. It's hard to tell with RPGs because so much of it is dice rolling, is analog, character sheets are analog, right? Like, how much of it will move to a digital space versus stay or form change on that move? Because even if I'm playing on Tabletop Simulator, I'm still rolling dice, right? I moved the analog digital, but I'm keeping the same mechanical implementation, right? So, to me, technology is going to have to change the mechanical implementation to really change the game. That's kind of, and streaming is different in that it's changed it in a sort of media level, but not a mechanical implementation in a lot of ways. Like, I don't go out and write games just for streaming purposes. I'm sure people do. I'm sure there are people who write their games explicitly for streamers.
Right.
And I don't know how different that makes it compared to a normal RPG, right? Does it change the mechanical, or are you just, this is the way you format your PDF or whatever, right? Like, those are questions that the RPG industry is still answering.
Sure. I guess let's close out with a question that I have right now. People are saying thank you so much for the answers and for the time. Thank you, Brad, for coming on. My question for you, Alan, right now, what RPG are you most excited about? As a fan of RPGs, not as a publisher, not as a designer.
I'm a massive fanboy of RPGs.
You are.
I don't have a good answer for that because
you don't.
It'll probably be whatever one I read next.
Right. Okay.
I just read Morkborg.
We're pronouncing it wrong, by the way.
How is it?
It's Merkborgie or something like that. Yeah, it's totally pronounced different. Yeah, I don't.
Merkborgie. I just read it.
Yeah. What'd you think of that?
It's a work of art. I think I'm still on a level digesting what I experienced reading it.
There's
a lot going on in that book.
There is. And like, it's not like a whole lot with like rules and stuff. It's just like a whole bunch of like tables and art. And
it's great. Yeah. I'm glad I bought it. One of the best purchases I made all year. It'll definitely make my top 10 list.
Yeah. It triggers my OCD though, for sure.
Yeah. It's laid out more like a magazine than an RPG.
Yeah, it is definitely.
Which is great. People should be experimenting with layout in RPGs. I think that's fantastic. I'm glad they're doing it.
Yep.
And I really want to, what I've been aching to play, I don't even know. Like, I'm playing in some games right now online that are kind of covering my bases. So
okay, that's good.
I've been wanting to do something cyberpunk. I've been feeling cyberpunky.
Nice. Okay.
I haven't decided where I feel about that. So.
All right.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just whatever. Half of my games are packed in boxes right now anyway, so I can't even look at them to get an idea.
That's right. You're in the process of moving, which is awesome. Congratulations on that.
yeah, it was exciting. I really do want to play, not run. So I guess that's the question, right?
Like, yeah, I was just kind of curious as a fan, what RPG are you really excited about right now?
I want to be a player in a really great Shadows of Estrin campaign or a really great John Carter of Mars campaign.
Okay.
Those two would be awesome for me.
Yeah.
I've been playing Star Trek, so I got that covered. So I'd love to do one of those two, I think.
All right.
Would be my up on my list.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, we're coming up on the top on almost on 60 minutes. If folks want more Alan Barr in their lives, you can go check out at Gallon Night Games on
that negativity.
Nobody, what's that?
Nobody's coming for that negativity. Don't even.
You never know. They might. You know, yeah. The internet's a weird place.
That's evidence.
you can check Alan out at Gallant K Games and gallantnightgames.com, as you can see in the on the UI right there. Where else, if folks want to know more about you, Alan, where should they go?
My personal Twitter is at Alan Barr, ALANBHR, alanbarr.net. We have an official Gallant Night Games Facebook group and Discord. Those are the best places to go. I'm pretty active in all of those. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Covered your basis.
Well, Alan,
I would say I'd be back on Victory Condition, but Doug doesn't invite me back anymore.
I invite you back, everyone. You know, I try not to monopolize your time. I would have you on every single week if I could, because I really enjoy you, Alan. And one of the great things about doing VCG is getting to meet and have friendships with folks that I probably wouldn't have otherwise if I didn't have this show. And I know that, you know, we kind of do, I do this as a content creator, you do this as a publisher, but you're genuinely my friend. And I really, really appreciate everything that you do for me. And I appreciate your friendship. I thank, you know, being in this opportunity to have you and that we've become friends over these last few years.
Yeah, it's been great. And maybe when we do the Kickstarter for Mechas and Monsters Second Edition, we'll run a campaign.
That would be cool. I would love that.
We'll do an online game where you're all kaiju and you can't use English. You just have to roar at each other for an hour online.
That you know what, we laugh, but that sounds like a VCG campaign.
It wouldn't be that much different than what we do when we
get there. So. Oh, man. All right, folks. If you are a fan of Alan Barr and of Gallant Knight Games and all their games that they put out, please hit the like button down below. Share this video with your friends so that they know that Alan is such a cool person. And hit that subscribe button as well, because we really appreciate everybody that is a part of our VCG community. And we just love having Alan on and talking and seeing all these folks, and Alan and everybody else that comes on. We just love seeing people succeed in the tabletop industry. So, all right, folks, that's going to do it for our second session of GraniteCon at Home. Thank you so much. Stick around. We're going to be on Twitch later at 2 o'clock p.m. To play some Jackbox TV, where you can actually play against some of the VCG contributors and see how good we are at trivia and guessing statistics and stuff. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be safe, be well, and remember, winning shouldn't be the only victory condition when you get to the table. We'll see you next time. Bye now.